And it's just about 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening. That means it's time for Off the Wall. Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, I'm over here, yes.
How you doing?
In the flesh. Yeah, I'm okay, but you know what you did. You know why I'm mad.
What'd I do now?
You know what it's about? It's about the apples. I don't mean to point this out publicly, but I just have to say, you just casually suggested, while we're in the grocery store this evening, why don't you pick out some apples, Kyle?
Yeah, and you picked out apples that confused the cash register. It wasn't my fault.
Yeah, so on this particular little venture, I go find the right bag, and there's a whole story with that too, about types of apples and all that. So anyway, I find the right bag, go through the rest of the shopping, and we get to the checkout line. I don't know how you did this, but you found... No. You had me find the one bag of apples, and now I have a conspiracy theory.
But wait a
minute.
One
bag of apples that is priced as over 21. It's a prohibited item or something.
Yeah, no, it...
You need ID. And here's my conspiracy. These are Washington State apples. I think New York State is classifying... in out-of-state apples as prohibitive items, requiring you to get ID checks so people get frustrated when they buy Washington State apples. Anyway, my point is, the lady who had to come and check... No, you have no defense. Don't even try to interrupt. No, I'm going all the way
I have nothing to say. I'm befuddled here.
Guilty. So then the lady comes to help us
uh-huh.
because we have prohibited items that are apples, for crying out loud. You have to explain this to me. So she agrees, okay, well, you know, it must be a problem with this particular bag of apples. Even though they all have the same barcode, it's clearly entered into their system under the barcode as this type of item.
Right, right.
So she thinks in her brilliance that she'll just waltz back, waddle, whatever she does, saunter over to the produce and pick any old bag of apples as though my selection of apples was like... you know, just like some errant thing I just grabbed blindly, as though I didn't take time when you suggested that I select some apples, as though I didn't take time to pick out the bag of apples that I wanted. But no, her brilliant idea was to come over with another bag that, again, scans as a prohibited item, so her little theory didn't work.
Yeah, but it had
guess
to be,
what
had
we
to be,
end up with?
Had to
guess
be tested.
What we end up, do you think she picked out the apples the way I did? Do you think she looked at that bag? I'm spitting mad. I'm so upset.
I had no idea this affected you so much.
Yeah. She just grabs whatever bag.
I was wondering why you didn't say a word on the whole way back, but I guess this explains it now.
I didn't really realize it until...
Okay, so we have all these bags of apples that are piling up by the cash register because none of them will go through. I think I suggested that we just take them, but she didn't go for that.
What we should have suggested is swapping the ones I selected with the ones that... allegedly scanned, but they didn't scan. How do you find prohibited apples?
I just don't understand how this is my fault. You picked the apples. What did I do?
I didn't actually realize that until I started blaming you, but you were fighting with... you got... Somehow you're responsible. When I find out, I'll interrupt the show, but go ahead. You talk about what you want to talk about. That's fine. Like this isn't a big story over
here.
Well,
I sure didn't want to talk about this, but okay, fine. You know, as long as we're talking about supermarkets, why is it that they put the frozen food section so far away from the cash register? You ever notice every single supermarket is like this? So you buy ice cream, and it's you know, you're in a race immediately. It's a hot day. It melts on the way home. It really does. So you need every second. And, you know, you can't have this long walk from the frozen food section to the cash register, and then you got to go to your car, and then you have to drive.
It's valid. You raise a good point. I just
why can't they keep them right next to the cash register?
I think you're assuming. Oh, I don't know why. It's some kind of structural sort of layout thing. It's all designed in computers, and they probably just use the same format at every store. But the situation with ice cream melting, I don't really think that's as much of a risk as you think, because they're in their little cocoon. Like, if you have a popsicle, it's like in a cocoon.
Kyle, I've come home with melted popsicles. Okay, so I know what I'm talking about. I've had dripping fudgicles over my fingers, crying in frustration because I didn't get home fast enough.
No, I don't want to diminish that. I'm not at all.
Don't you dare diminish that.
I saw you. I've never seen you
dare.
Like that. It was really upsetting to watch, actually. But I, you know, in consolation aside, I don't really think. I think you have of a complex. You are traumatized by melted fudgicles.
No, I am complex. I will give you that, but. I am traumatized by it, absolutely.
Well, I want to reassure you, it's okay to feel that way, but I don't know the scientific facts, but I think you may have a misplaced concern, because I think popsicles, I think ice cream is more resilient than you think it is.
Okay, first of all, you're using these phrases, popsicle, ice cream, fudgicle, interchangeably, and they're not the same. They're totally different.
They do have a different
so
melt
please,
rate.
Don't lecture me about frozen desserts if you have not taken the time to actually study frozen desserts.
So wait, yeah, what are the numbers?
How dare you? That's an interesting phrase, isn't it? How dare you? Is there an answer to that question? And why is that the only thing where you sort of say it like that? How dare you? It's such a weird way of saying something. We all say it. Huh. How dare you?
Huh. Yeah, it's a disgust. It's like a...
It's like, how speak you? How think you? it doesn't work on anything else.
It's sort of like how daring of you, right?
Uh-huh.
But how dare
well,
you?
How else would you say that?
How daring of you?
Do you dare to say that? And the answer then would be, yes, I do. But how dare you? What's the answer? It's not yes. It's how dare
yeah.
I? Well, I did it, I said it, and I stand by it. That's how I dare it.
And how daring of you has different meanings, whereas how dare you is very specifically just one sort of scolding, upset. I don't know. There's a good word for this. I'm blanking. But
this is off the wall. We are committed tonight to not addressing any serious issue that's going on, and we're not talking about the big news item of today. And we'll explain why later. We're going to avoid it for now, okay? We'll talk about other things. But I guess we don't have to talk about the supermarket the whole time. We can talk about other issues. Because there are other issues that have happened over the last week, you know?
I'm up for anything. Just, I had to get that off my
No,
chest,
yeah, I'm sure you did. But it doesn't get us away from the fact that we have an election bearing down on us, like a Mack truck.
We watched one of the... The retrospective, I guess, the archival.
Yeah, NBC has. If you have NBC on demand, which everybody who has Optimum does have, you just have to hit a bunch of those big buttons, and you'll eventually find it. But it's probably online too. NBC primetime shows. Look under primetime shows, and you'll see both the RNC presidential conventions and the DNC presidential conventions. And what that is, it's an archive that goes all the way back to 1948. And if you click on each year, you'll see the acceptance speech for each candidate for each of those years. It's fascinating. It really is. So for the technology alone, you're watching how they film these things and what the people around the accepting speaker are doing. They have typewriters sometimes, and it's sometimes you hear the commentators from the networks back then.
Or a lady combing her hair.
Yeah, that happens too. Everyone's smoking. Oh my God, cigars, pipes, cigarettes. They're all smoking.
So we're taking this in, and I really hope they do the same thing with debates, too, because it's a really cool thing to see the convention this way. If you could see old debates in the same format.
Well, that's the first debates, actually, were the Kennedy-Nixon debates.
Right.
That got broadcast.
Sure, sure.
And that's why Nixon lost, because he was sweating or something.
Yeah, he looked nervous and shifty tricky dick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, and that was the age of the visual president or that whole race being this sort of brand, and that ties in with what my comment was, which was basically one of the remarks from the convention. I think it was a Republican convention, but the speaker was basically talking about it and saying that now is when the campaign starts in earnest. And I mean, here we are. Like, I feel like we've been in a cross country race. Like, it's 4, 5, 6, 8. I don't know how you tell time these days. When you're zero before BT before Trump. I don't know how we're telling time anymore. But it feels like this election has been anticipated since before the 2018 election, at least.
It's been anticipated since before the 2017 inauguration.
And it just seems so quaint of these speakers, these people speaking to you from this relic, this time capsule.
Mm-hmm.
How quaint of them suggesting that the campaign is just now going to start. Well, I don't know when the conventions were granted, exactly.
We were watching Barry Goldwater from 1964 a little bit earlier, and he's talking about how the Republican Party is the party of law and order. It's like the same thing we're hearing today.
Yeah, a lot of the lines and verbiage is plucked directly from some of these speeches, specifically, I think.
And I don't mean to be racist, but I hate sentences that start that way.
I'm not a racist.
Every single person in that, what is it, stadium, coliseum, arena, they're all white guys with glasses. Every single one of them looks exactly the same. You know, some of them are smoking and some of them are typing. But wow, it's and there are some women too, but not very many. And they're all in black and white, but that's not their fault. But it's an educational thing. So if you have NBC On Demand, which you probably do, look this up. And it's interesting. It's educational. Don't let that dissuade you. You'll learn something. You'll see parallels.
Indeed, indeed. And speaking of that freight train, so this is the transitional mode, the sort of weird end of summer where I guess a lot of people wouldn't be paying attention to politics. They'd be traveling, but they're not traveling because we have a pandemic. And the debates are the sort of next milestone. I was talking about it in the context of seeing historical ones because that is the very next sort of spectacle of the campaign before the election.
The first debates are coming up at the end of this month, end of September. And that's going to be fascinating. Biden and Trump in the same room. Now, here's the thing. Trump has, if he has skill at anything, it's at riling people up. And I've seen Biden get riled up, and it's not a bad thing. It can be a really good thing. What he said last week was incredible. How is this possible? How can we? This is such an idiotic place to be, just answering something that Trump had allegedly said. If he has that kind of outrage in person and expresses it well, I think it can be a very good thing. However, if Trump turns him into someone who's sputtering, not making much sense, and saying things that maybe he shouldn't say, then Trump wins. That's basically what he operates to do, is to get people outraged and saying things that will come back to haunt them. I think Biden knows enough to be able to play the situation. We certainly had 4 years to study it. So it's going to be something. It's going to be fascinating to watch. And I believe we get three of those debates, and there's only one vice presidential debate, which will also be fascinating to watch.
Truly, truly, and a lot of the character and leadership style, the confidence building that may occur, it comes from these kinds of interactions when you get to see the candidate in their element with an opponent, and of course with you as the audience, and sharing their eloquence of the whole thing. And how they characterize everything. And it will be really interesting because the audience of Trump and perhaps his base, and of course the wider audience of everyone watching that. And I think the people will decide on this. It will be a factor. So it's nothing wrong with early voting, but you definitely don't want to miss this. You want to experience how the candidate is on his toes and how he deals with the incumbent, who I think, you know, it has been suggested that, you know, maybe Biden does badly, but I don't know.
How could he do badly? Either one of us, if we were in the same room with Trump, we wouldn't do badly. Any of our listeners wouldn't do badly.
Yeah, I think it's taking bait. It's not staying focused on your message. And that's where he's on his toes. I think we're probably more likely to see Trump's searching for things to say, or he'll really just be a one-trick pony, just kind of saying the same tired things over and over again, insulting him, trying to throw Biden off.
Well, it's up to the moderators then to call him on certain things. Now, it's interesting, there probably won't be an audience, right, because of COVID.
Yeah, but Steve Scully, the guy who is a host for C-SPAN, will be one of the moderators.
Okay. Was that the most patient guy in the world, or is that somebody?
Is.
Okay.
Yep.
Well,
he was a backup for moderating some of the debates in the primary cycle with all the other Democratic candidates, but he's now actually going to be a moderator, so that's exciting.
This is the guy who has to talk C-SPAN to all the rednecks in the morning when they call up on Washington Journal.
He's one of many anchors at C-SPAN, but it's really cool to see that news resource represented because it's a program with no ads, they have no commercial interests, they're really just about letting people talk, and I think that's kind of what we're about with community radio, and occasionally we get letters and so forth to otw@2600.com.
Yes, please write us.
And that's what we're about. We want to have a discussion, have a dialogue, hear opinions, hear expertise and perspectives that we might not ordinarily have on the airwaves.
Absolutely. And that's true 24/7, really, whether it's music, news, opinions, even sports. We try to provide the alternatives, the things that others aren't covering, aren't talking about. And that's what WUSB has been about since 1977.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And just definitely stay informed and keep an eye out for those debates and other political happenings, because it's like you characterize a freight train, a semi truck. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm,
the amount of stories, there's books, tell-alls coming out and things being said about the military, what Trump thinks of
that. Okay, that's something. Yeah, okay, you're bringing that up. That's what happened in the last week.
Where, I'm not saying these are all valid.
Well, he is alleged to have said horrible things about people in the military and the Vietnam War and all kinds of things like that. Whether, no matter how you feel about it, for a president to say something like that is certainly shocking and beneath the office. But what's interesting to me is how Trump has spent the last 4 years basically tearing down immigrants, poor people, black people, women, LGBTQ, anybody you can possibly imagine who is not just like him. And now that it's alleged that he has done the same thing to the military, that is when the outrage suddenly manifests itself. That's when everybody has something to say, and it's in the news cycle. Yeah, this is who he is. Okay, why are we surprised? Why are you surprised? This is exactly what you get when you put somebody like this in office. So, you know, it's how do you prove somebody didn't say something? There are enough people saying that he did say something that makes it stick. All right, and the people who are defending him tend to have the last name of Trump or tend to be in his inner circle. But once they leave that inner circle, you know, like the Cohens. And the Boltons, they kind of say what really happened. That's when they start telling the truth. So I think it's something we just have to weigh. We just have to judge for ourselves. But remember who you're dealing with. And ask yourself, is it possible? Is this the kind of thing he would do? And for me, absolutely.
Yeah, he's been his own worst or best character witness for 4 years. Like, we become intimately familiar with his style and what he's like and what he's apt to say in different contexts, and it would not shock people to hear if there was a tape, hear him say something like that.
Yeah, and there are tapes.
Given what he said about so many other people, it's kind of obvious.
There are definitely tapes. People need to release those tapes.
I think that's the kind of the same thing, and I was speaking about this with the debates, like a woman called in to the Washington Journal program, and I listened because I hear the opinion, and I wanted to, I don't necessarily agree with what she was saying, but she was cautioning people that might, you know, vote early to see the debates first in case Biden fails, and that's what I was getting at. But I think that's a really stupid way to look at it, and I think it's about really not having a choice. We haven't had a choice in a while. So being on the fence, and if that's going to be the thing, it's like, you know, okay, well, you know what? Watch the debates and then make your choice, lady. But this whole thing about him saying that about troops, fine. If that brings in more people that are willing to stand up and join the many other of affected peoples who have been subject of desire over the years, then fine. I mean, but you're not really that brave to a lot of other people who have been saying this over and over again, and that it takes that kind of alleged disrespect for the military. I'm questioning how much you care about a lot of other people. That's a pretty insular way to insular trigger that puts you over. So I don't know. I think that it's a little disingenuous for people to be shocked and horrified now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's when you look at what's been going on for the past few years, you should not be surprised by that. And I have to honestly say, the people I know who are protesting against wars and things like that, I think they have more respect for the people in the military than Trump does. You may not agree with somebody, you may not go along with whatever their mission is, but you still know what they're going through as individuals. You know why they might have chosen that route. Whereas Trump, if you're not a billionaire, if you're not somebody that can benefit him, he has nothing but contempt. So he does not respect those people. He does not even think of them as people. So that's not something that should be surprising. But if it's something that you're just realizing now, great. Okay, welcome to the club. But there are a lot of people who have been the victim of that. And maybe our voice will finally be heard.
Yeah, and pick your issue. There's plenty of other revelations, and this is it. It's sort of like early October surprises, left and right. A lot of dynamics in the race itself. That's all I wanted to point out.
You see this letter in this week's Village Times, which is our local newspaper in the Three Village area.
I did. A friend sent me the article.
Uh huh. Well, it's a letter, not an article.
I'm sorry. Yeah, a friend sent me a picture of it.
Okay. Well, it's an open letter to our local congressman, Congressman Lee Zeldin, who is somebody that we frequently talk about because he is a Trump wannabe. He is somebody who echoes everything Trump says, is his lapdog, every derogatory term you could think of for somebody who desperately wants to impress Trump. I don't know why. I don't know why the people of Suffolk County vote for this guy. I'm so disappointed with what goes on in this county, just instance after instance of racist attacks and just really backwards thinking that I thought we were past. Anyway, this letter, it kind of gave me a little bit of hope, but I want to read it to you. You keep using, this is addressed to Congressman Zeldin, you keep using the adjectives like dark, negative, extreme, dangerous, radical, when describing Democrats and liberals, which is exactly what Trump says. Keep in mind, everything he says is exactly what Trump says. That is astonishing to me, since your base and your Republican mentor, President Donald Trump's base, have followings that include the Ku Klux Klan, neo-Nazis, extreme and radical religious leaders, racist, anti-Semites, a 17-year-old murderer of protesters, and gun-toting suburbanites. I would like to inform you of what has been happening to me, my family, and my community. On Father's Day, a small gathering of six families, including children, held a peace and equality vigil on a corner a block from my house. A truck pulled up, and the driver started screaming and threatening us. His verbiage included the N-word, the C-word, the B-word, rape, and telling us to get out of his community. FYI, he doesn't own a home in our community. Then he left us with these words, "I am going home to get my gun and effing kill you all." Again, there were five children with us. Now, two other families and I have an order of protection against him. He also, quoting Trump from his Tulsa, Oklahoma gathering from the night before, which you, Zeldin, were in attendance. A week after the incident, as we stood on the corner again, this person drove his truck toward us, causing us to quickly disperse. This seems to be the MO of the pro-Trump people. Drive your vehicle into crowds. In other places, that is called terrorism. In England, when somebody does that and they're Muslim, they're instantly labeled a terrorist. Here, if you're a pro-Trump person, you drive into a crowd. It happened in Huntington. The guy was sitting in his car, and the cops were talking to him, didn't even get arrested. It happened in Times Square over the past week. I don't think they even tracked down the guy yet. They said, "Oh, we can't make an arrest because nobody was hurt." Did you know you could drive your car into a crowd of people, and you won't get arrested unless somebody complains? Didn't know that. But apparently, it's true. If you're a Trump supporter, that's one of the many benefits. Anyway, I digress here. let me go back to this letter here. So he drove towards us, causing us to quickly disperse. Police were called, and while the police were helping us, a man walked up and assumed the police were called against us. The man walking asked the police if he could stand his ground, i.e. shoot us, if we came onto his property. Actually asked the cop that. This man lives in my community. Somebody else. 2 weeks later, Lee, another stellar citizen who is a fan of your mindset, came onto my property and tore down signs. Not once, but twice. When my husband and I confronted him as he was reading a sign I put up addressing the person who was trespassing, he stated, "BLM, Black Lives Matter, is a terrorist organization, and he is proud of his white skin." I guess he felt his white skin allowed him to destroy personal property and trespass. You know, it's funny, when it happens at the demonstrations, we call it a riot, and we call it thuggery, and we call it violence. But here, it's expressing an opinion. Yeah, the policeman who happened to be patrolling because of the other racist intervened. Your racist fan was told to stay away and never have contact with us. Now, we have one of those lunatics, or possibly another racist, dumping garbage on our property. Lee, because of the hate, venom, and lies you continue to spew to the public, these racist and hateful men feel entitled to behave in such a despicable manner. I have lived in my community for 20 years. This is the first time I have security cameras and a genuine fear each time a car, especially a pickup truck, slows down in front of my house. My stomach turns each and every time I see a Trump banner and a sign that endorses you, Lee Zeldin. I would never destroy other people's property, and I couldn't imagine, even on my worst day, threatening to go home and get a gun to kill them and their children. This is not fake news. These events actually happened. And if you choose to investigate, I will supply you with the case numbers. These are your people, Lee. They are dark. They are negative. They are extreme. They are radical. And they are most certainly dangerous. I remember when you started your hateful and vicious political journey at the Setauket Neighborhood House, when the police had to be called to rein in your constituents. I'd like to know more about that. I haven't gotten that far back into Lee Zeldin's background to know how he got started, but wow, there must be some history there. Your vile conduct has unleashed the worst in people. I believe the people of Congressional District 1 have had enough and will choose justice, peace, and equity for all this November, and we will vote you out. Then, mercifully, we will no longer be subjected to your dark and dangerous ways. And that letter from Susan Blake of East Setauket to our local newspaper, the Village Times. When I see a letter like that, it makes me angry, makes me sad, but it also fills me with inspiration because I realize there are other people going through this now. There are other people who are outraged and who are standing up for themselves. And as long as you have a voice, as long as you speak up and people hear you, more will come to your aid, to your support. They will be there for you. But you have to say something. You can't suffer in silence. You're not alone. And, you know, I got to say, Kyle, when we drive around sometimes, we see the same pickup trucks with the massive flags, and they're very intimidating towards people. They tailgate. They rev their engines when there are crowds of people. And, you know, if you're wearing a Black Lives Matter shirt, what happens? What do you think happens to you? I know lots and lots of people who are afraid to put up a Black Lives Matter sign or to wear a shirt or anything like that. These people, they're not afraid. They're not hiding. They're out there. They're pushing themselves into your space. And it takes letters like this to make me realize we have to do more as far as pushing back. And, yeah, we're going to see a lot of ugliness. There's a lot of ugliness out there, but we have to expose it for others to realize there's a problem.
Yeah, the other word that came to mind is uncomfortable. I hear that, and I'm uncomfortable. I know the writer is uncomfortable with what's going on, with the kind of leadership we're lacking, with the actions of people, and the actions and then the rationalizations or the excuses or the doing it under the auspices of any kind of feigned patriotism, that disgusts me more than the people.
You want to know who patriots are? That. Patriots are the people marching in the streets. No, not the people destroying things. And how dare you, listeners, connect the two? The people who burn things down. First of all, that only happens in a couple of places. It doesn't happen everywhere. If police start attacking people, they get angry and they start acting out, sure. And I think that's justified. But most of the time, 90% more, people march down streets, just like they did in Port Jefferson a couple of months ago, and they're completely peaceful. It doesn't get covered in the media. The media only wants the story where things are burning. That's why you see that so often, but you don't see the story so many hundreds of times more, where people are outraged, angry, and expressing themselves, as they have every right to do. So, yeah. Don't assume that because those people are out there demonstrating that they're the same as people who are destroying things. They're certainly not. And it's a good thing that that we have people standing up for what they believe in. Imagine if we didn't.
Yeah, thinking that just speaks to the disintegration of nuance in anything these days. We can't talk about two things at once. We can't have really dynamic, varied, and chaotic things. We can't process that. Everything has to be viewed in this polar way. And it just isn't how life is, and it isn't how reality occurs. Things are chaotic, and you do have violence and things going on at the same time as real forms of expression. And that is the difficulty. That's the challenge of our society. But we believed collectively, at least I think we did, that we're up to that challenge. And what's being lost, I think, is a patience for what that takes.
Yeah. Very true. You know, there was a development last Thursday. We talked about this a week ago, where in Portland, one of the right-wing counter-demonstrators was killed, allegedly by this other guy who, we had a hard time believing this. He called himself 100% Antifa. And considering we can't even agree how to pronounce that word, if it's even a word, we didn't really have much faith in what he stood for. And he had a record that was pretty long and sordid. And there's a dark side to every community, and he seemed to epitomize that dark side.
And all the pictures of him were in white. Let's just put that out there. He's not one of the protesters wearing black.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, he seemed kind of drawn to the flame. I'm not seeing a whole lot of people who were defending him. There were a couple of idiots, but, and you know, we are quick to condemn the idiots who are allegedly on our side. You don't see that. You don't see that with the pro-Trump people. No matter what happens, they figure out a way to justify it. You know, it's either a trap, it's a lie, it's a conspiracy, or he was pushed into it. Look at the guy in Wisconsin, who we made allusion to just a moment ago, who killed two protesters. They're raising money for him. He's a hero. They're saying it was self-defense. The people running towards him to disarm the shooter, they were the aggressors. This is how their minds operate. But in this particular case, I think people were quick to see, no, this guy was unhinged. It was wrong what he did. You know, the guy who got killed was also intimidating people and was no upstanding citizen himself, but certainly didn't deserve to die. But what happened on Thursday, he gave an interview, which we saw on Vice News, and then moments later we found out that he had been killed by federal police. Now, what's interesting about this is that if you look at this like you would look at it in a foreign country, it would seem like an execution squad was just sent out to eliminate him by Trump. Today, Trump said that he ordered the federal police, U.S. Marshals, to go arrest him because the local police weren't doing it for whatever reason. And all we heard was that he put up a struggle, so he had to be killed. Now, nobody is mourning this guy. Apparently, even his own sister says, well, this isn't bad news. Horrible thing to say. But I think there might be more to this story. It certainly doesn't look good. You know, when you have a situation where people are getting abducted and thrown into vans or just getting killed a couple of days after they kill somebody else without any trial or any plea or anything like that, it really makes me think of how things work in these other parts of the world that we never thought we would be like.
And we convince ourselves that we aren't like, when all indicators are pointing to things being a lot worse than we want to tell ourselves. And over again, I just feel like we walk around and tell ourselves all these different things. I don't know if it's because we're like more consumer society or I don't know. People don't have any jobs, so it's not like we're preoccupied with our own rat race, really.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's like a lot of class dichotomy, and that is a huge part of this. But it's just so weird how we're still quiet. And I agree that that's changing rapidly. There are many more people in the streets being vocal, being a part of these groups. And that's why there's a lot more unpredictable people at these events on all sides. It's unfortunate that there are more and more armed people, but the larger the numbers, the larger a swath of society, you're going to draw. So you're going to get people that act in bizarre ways, or they're on a very different life trajectory. And but raising money for people that that are gunning people down after they've been menacing those very people, I don't know. I find that I think that's playing sides in a really ugly way.
Absolutely. Yeah, I want to focus on a couple of local stories. One Nassau County, one Suffolk County, both involving accidents. And interesting how they're dealt with. This from Newsday. Nassau police investigators failed to interview six people who witnessed an August 1st boating accident in Freeport that killed one man and severely injured two others. Assemblyman Phil Ramos said Nassau police did not fully investigate the fatal crash because the man who was killed, Jorge Soto of Freeport, is an immigrant from El Salvador, and because the operator of the boat that caused the fatal crash is white and may be connected to people influential in local politics or law enforcement officials. We have the list of names. We're handing it over to the police department, Ramos said. We want an explanation. Imagine that. Fatal crash. Didn't interview the witnesses. Now, Ramos is a former Suffolk police officer. Before you start saying he's anti-cop, you know, you can question cops and not be anti-cop. You can be a cop and question cops, too. You know that? He acknowledged that he does not have any evidence the operator of the second boat had links to the police. But you know what I find interesting about this case? This was such a violent crash that the other boat was split in half. All right, and the guy was killed. Nowhere in any of these stories do you find the person's name. Now, when you hear about traffic accidents, they always print the name of somebody. If you crash into people and you kill somebody, your name is in the paper. In this case, this guy's being protected. This name is not in the paper. If that's not a connection to the police somehow or somebody high up, I don't know what is. And these poor people, their immigration status is not an issue, should never be an issue. They have the right to live and not to be killed. And that is what this should be about. And from the beginning, from when this happened, August 1st, there's been so much wrong with this story. Why is the name of the person who drove the boat that killed this other person, why is that being protected? You know, it's like when a cop shoots somebody and you don't find out the cop's name. That should never happen, too. But this, it wasn't a cop, was it? Maybe it was a cop. It sure makes me think that it was. And then there was another story in Hopog. The mothers of two children seriously injured by an alleged hit-and-run driver on August 3rd helped lead a demonstration in Hopog on Saturday calling for upgraded charges against the woman behind the wheel. My son is still in the hospital, said Simone Houston of North Amityville, the mother of one of the injured boys, Troy Russell, 9 years old. It's hard to fathom that my son has to stay in the hospital every night, and she's home. Suffolk County Police arrested Shannon Palmer. See, they gave her name. It wasn't even a fatal crash, but they gave her name. Shannon Palmer of Hopog, the morning after she allegedly hit Troy, along with Toronto Jamison, 12 years old, of Patchogue, with the Ford Explorer she was driving while they were on their bicycles on the shoulder of Express Drive North in Ronkonkoma, on the same block where Toriano's father lives. Palmer pleaded not guilty on August 4th in First District Court in Central Islip to two felony counts of leaving the scene of an accident with serious physical injury. She was released under the state's bail reform law, a law that Houston said should be revised to keep people like Palmer behind bars. And yeah, a lot of people on the left feel there's something wrong with that law, the way it's being implemented. So you'll find some agreement on that, in cases like this, certainly. More than 75 people walked several blocks through a residential neighborhood in Hopog, shouting, "Lock her up," and "Justice for Troy and Tori," ending on a quiet dead-end street where police last month said that Palmer lives. It's interesting, police last month said that. Okay, we want Shannon Palmer to be accountable for her actions, Houston said through a bullhorn. We are here to let your neighbors know what you have done. Houston said in an interview that if Palmer would have stopped, and if she would have just called the police and gave my baby some help, I would not have these feelings. I would have said it was an accident. But instead, she said, our children were left for dead. How would you feel if someone runs over your kid and drives off? You think maybe not the kind of person who just should be able to just go home and live her life? Shanetta Jamison of Patchogue, the mother of Toriano, said Palmer needs to be charged with attempted murder. Leaving the scene of an accident is not enough. A Suffolk County District Attorney's Office spokeswoman said in an email that, as with any case, we will investigate the facts fully and bring any and all appropriate legally sufficient charges. But get this, about a dozen Suffolk police officers were observing the protest, but suddenly arrested four people as the demonstrators stood in the street. Yeah, they arrested the demonstrators. Police appeared to give no warning immediately before the arrests, although two officers had earlier told some demonstrators to keep to the side of the street. Keep to the side of the street. You don't keep to the side of the street and you're arrested like this woman was arrested for running kids over? It's the same thing in your eyes? Move to the side of the street on a dead end? Wow. So you see, there's more to this story, the way people are being given preferential treatment. It's not mentioned in this Newsday story. I did a little research. Guess what? The driver is white. The kids are black. Do the math. So, yeah, it goes on at Long Island constantly, and we have to have our eyes open. We have to let people know what we see. And I'm just glad people are speaking out in those two cases, horrible tragedies that it took for that to happen. We need to support people when they encounter things like this. Hey, school is open here at Stony Brook.
Yeah, I guess that's a good lead-in to just remind people that there are a lot of young people getting to and from school, and they're running around in the afternoon, and they're all over. They're not inside. It's not the same kind of conditions on the roads as when everyone was under a stay-at-home order. So be extra vigilant. There's people out. There's people trying to get exercise. You got to be really, really cautious, especially at dusk on some of these evenings when you have deer and other things. But double down and don't cause other tragedy in these trying times when we're full up on tragedy. So.
Well, yeah, that's certainly true. And something else to look out for, considering that schools are open or opening, is COVID-19. Remember that? Yeah, that's still around. And I'm really worried because I'm not sure, looking at other parts of the country, that we're going to come through this so well. A lot of people being irresponsible. We heard what happened up at Oneonta, where people decided their college students are just going to ignore this and wound up getting their entire school shut down as a result. Here at Stony Brook, we had, I think, one infection last week. This week, it's up to 24. And here's the rule, according to what Cuomo has said. Between a 14-day period, starting on August 28th and running until this Friday, September 11th, whenever the lesser of 100 individuals or 5% of the total on-campus population, inclusive of students, faculty, and staff, test positive for COVID-19, that location must immediately transition all in-person learning to remote formats and limit on-campus activities for a period of 14 days. So, if the number, I checked yesterday, so I'm not sure if the number has changed, but if that number goes up to 100 or above by Friday, Stony Brook gets shut down. I hope it does not happen. I hope that people are acting responsibly, and I hope that we get through this. But please, please be careful out there and act responsibly.
And it doubles. It doubles quickly. So we'll find out soon. But as with what we learned in the spring, everything you do can help slow that. So that is really important news and important reminders for everyone on campus and, of course, in the wider community.
That's right. Oh, it's our film projector has started up, and there's the piano player that's taken his place. All right, it's time for Films of the Year That Was, where we venture through the Academy Award-winning films from when the Academy Awards began to the present. And we are up to 1979, and we haven't gotten our domestic film yet, but we have the foreign film. And we saw the foreign film.
Yes, yeah, we did.
What is the name of the foreign film, Kyle?
Die Blech Trommel.
All right, in English, please.
Oh, The Tin Drum.
The Tin Drum, yes, what a classic. What do you think?
What did I think? It was a...
A train wreck?
The screeching and the shrieking. It turned into, like, his little, like, tick. It's like a thing that he did.
Okay, well, nobody knows what you're talking about. Let's just say quickly. This kid, he's 3 years old. He decides he doesn't want to grow anymore. So he throws himself down the staircase. I don't know how that makes him stop growing. And he also has a tin drum that he beats constantly when something doesn't appeal to him, which is most of the time, and he discovers that he can scream in a certain way and break glass. I think that pretty much covers it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if we would diagnose him these days with something, some kind of attention disorder, or...
We'd give him Ritalin or something.
Tell him that he is, like, you know, all over the spectrum. I don't know. We would do something. There is a condition, because this kid was not right.
Yeah, no, he wasn't quite right. That's true.
And he befriended, and he kind of had, like, a mentor in the carnival. He went to the circus once, and...
Because there were little people there.
There were other little
they didn't
people.
Call them little people then.
And sort of like in The Shining, this person there, I guess, what would you call them? Like a conductor of a circus? They're the circus...
MC?
Presenter? They're the...
Master of ceremonies?
They're not a conductor, but they're like a...
Sergeant at arms? I don't know. It doesn't matter.
They're the main person.
Yeah, the main guy.
Yeah, the top hat. You know, anyway... That person finds his eye, and they kind of have this connection and this bond over having decided long ago that they're never going to get older. And this person did the same thing, apparently, and this is his vocation or her vocation.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, that's not really how it works. This person said that he decided at age 10 he was going to stop growing. That's not how little people come to be, but regardless. The film was made in 1979. We should also point out... It's documenting the period of when the Nazis were rising, and these people happen to be in Poland, in a part that wants to be, or that Germany wants, and that they want to be part of Germany. So you got that going on.
It's true. This is all in the background as, like, it's almost just a, not slapstick, but, like, just a weird aside. That they're burning books, or that they're out doing this crazy stuff, or cheers and parading around.
It's a celebration of the bizarre, yes. And not without controversy, too, because, well, the kid playing the three-year-old was actually an actor who was 11 or maybe 12 at the time. And what the story does is it has him growing up, but he doesn't change the way he looks. So he tells people, yeah, I'm 16 now, but he still looks like he's... Well, he never really looked like he was 3, but he looks like he's maybe 7 or something. Apparently the actor who plays him has a condition where he ages very slowly, or grows very slowly. So he looked younger than he was, but he definitely wasn't that old. So the controversy comes from the fact that this kid is coming of age. And he's a kid, you know, and for 2 weeks in a row now we have films like this with this kind of controversy. This is European films of the 70s, I guess, but they both won the Academy Award. There are scenes where he is basically losing his virginity to this this much older woman, and
I think she's like a prostitute or...
I'm not sure. There's all kinds of hidden innuendos.
I think there's some brothels and some stuff going on.
There's definitely, yeah. It's a German film from the 70s. What do you expect?
Yeah.
But I want to read you something that occurred when this film... Well, actually, the film came out in 1979, but this happened in June 1997. At the urging of a Christian fundamentalist group, and after viewing a few isolated scenes, an Oklahoma County District Court judge ruled that the film contained child pornography, as defined by Oklahoma's obscenity laws, and was therefore illegal. Oklahoma City Police confiscated all copies of the film from libraries and rental outlets without obtaining the necessary search warrants or court orders. They intimidated video store managers into giving them the addresses of customers with rental copies. They went to those homes. They confiscated the movies. Yeah, in 1997, right here in America, the local district attorney announced that anyone possessing a copy of the movie would be arrested. This is the film we just saw. We're just following the list, okay? I'm not seeking this out. The DA was forced to back down within weeks, and most of the seized videos had been returned by December. By October 1998, after several related lawsuits, U.S. federal courts ruled that the movie did not violate Oklahoma obscenity laws, and the seizure of the videotapes had been unconstitutional. U.S. Court of Appeals closed the final case in May 2001, and the movie is once again available in Oklahoma County. So if for some reason you're in Oklahoma County and you want to see the Tin Drum, you can do that.
Well, the actor himself was an adult by the time these scenes were shot.
Actually,
right?
No. Well, it depends what you consider an adult, because he was, I believe, 11 or 12, as I said, when they made the film. And, you know, there's a scene.
It's like three scenes you see his rear, like, twice.
Well, that's my point. There's a scene where he's in bed with another woman, and, you know, the implication is that they're having sex, but somebody comes and says, hey, you have to go now. They could have cut the scene then. They didn't cut the scene then. They continued. You see him getting out of bed, and he's bare-ass naked. They didn't have to film it. They ended up to actually have a naked kid in the bed. But that is, I guess, the way they made the film then.
But it was also framed such that there was someone standing over, like, the basin where he's bathing and getting dressed. And it's, like, choreographed in such way that you only see, like, his rear for, like, a second.
Okay, but, you know,
it's really not a stunning scene, but the scenarios he's in, I think, are more suggestive.
It's different. It's different than what I'm used to. It's different than what I think most American film viewers are used to. But that is our 1979 film, The Tin Drum. Can't wait for next year. Can't wait for 1979 domestic if USPS ever comes through. Hey, we are pretty much out of time. I guess I should mention that we were pre-recorded this week. That's why we didn't talk about what happened today. Because we don't know what happened today, because it's actually yesterday for us.
But we're watching right now.
We are. And we're going to talk about that next week, along with whatever happens live next week, or something like that.
Yeah. We'll just see what strikes us, see what we're in the mood for.
You know, Harry Chapin sung a gospel song once? It's true.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I found it. Good night.
Oh, well, I wonder. Yes, I wonder. What would happen? What would happen to this world? Well, I wonder what would happen to this world. Now if a man tried to take his time on earth and prove before he died what one man's life could be worth, well, I wonder what would happen to this world. A woman, she used a lifeline as something more than some man's servant, mother, wife, time. Well, I wonder what would happen to this world. Oh, well, I wonder. Oh, yes, I wonder. What would happen? What would happen to this world? Well, I wonder what would happen to this world. As I look around me, there's some strange things. There's muggers and there's jugglers, and we are led by clowns. If an answer ever found us, would we change things? Or are we just the people out and ready for the ground? And if our future lies on the final line, are we brave enough to see the signals and the signs? I wonder what would happen to this world. We see the people, we see them marching down. Do we join the parade or do we try and turn around? Well, I wonder what would happen to this world. I wonder, oh yes, I wonder, what would happen, what would happen to this world? Well, I wonder what would happen to this world. Disciple children walk the streets, selling books and flowers. Can they see the last one with a semblance of a dream? If we say that no one's out there and we say we're going nowhere, can we avoid the question, is this all that it means? Or if a man tried to take his time on earth and prove it for one man's life could be worse. Well, I wonder what would happen to this world. Oh, well, I wonder. Oh, yes, I wonder. Oh, what would happen? What would happen to this world? Well, I wonder what would happen to this world. Yes, I wonder.